2SER acknowledges the custodians of the Gadigal and Darug lands from which we broadcast.
Get down, 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 get down.
Hello and welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange on 2SER. I'm Christine Gallagher, starting us off with a Muppets cover version of Jungle Boogie, which is a hint of the conversation that's yet to come. It's a radiothon special today. 2SER's radiothon is on from the 12th to the 26th of September. It's the station's annual fundraiser and an opportunity to renew your financial subscription or become a financial subscriber for the first time. Join our wonderful 2SER community and go in the running for a great prize. And you can find out more about the prizes and how to subscribe or donate at 2ser.com. The theme this year is Feel the Vibes. And to get us in the mood, we're feeling some music vibes here in the studio today with Liz Jaffray, co-host and producer of the program Music Mothers and Others, which is broadcast here on Radio 2SER on Monday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Chrissy. Totally feel the vibe. And also, of course, we know that we're in the middle of a, you know, cost of living crisis and everything like that. So if all that you can donate to us is your ears and your good vibes, then, of course, Radiothon is very happy for that too. Tell someone you love that 2SER is still going on almost 50 years. We're coming up to 50 years. So do that. If that's all you can do is tell people how great we are, we'll take that too.
So well said, Liz. I agree. And I always think, do it if you can and do it on behalf of this person who can't do it and who can only lend their ears at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's the way we keep going.
Absolutely.
So welcome back to the Wide Open Air Exchange. You were on the program earlier this year and we were speaking about your approach to higher education and teaching and research as an associate, I nearly said producer, associate professor.
I'm an associate producer too. Well, a lot of what we do is producing stuff.
Yeah. An associate professor of media and journalism. And there were so many more questions that I wanted to ask you and so many more threads that I wanted to pull on. So I'm really happy that you've come back and you're indulging me for a part two.
Thank you.
A music-themed one, focusing on your vocational life in the music industry as a music journalist and with your academic interests in popular music. So that's what we're doing. One of the things I like to do on this program that we didn't do a lot of last time was to sort of go take you back and sort of think about early influences.
Yeah.
And we did a bit in terms of your teaching and your interests in that, but I would love to know the origins of your interest in music and what were some of those early musical influences.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that sounds a bit cliched to say I don't remember a time without music, but it's true. I really don't. And it definitely came through my family life. And so my dad actually was on radio. He was on regional radio, not quite community radio, but regional radio. But they're very similar, you know, in terms of serving a community and very much being at the nuts and bolts of things. He was a musician as well. He played piano accordion, which I still want to be able to do, but it's not, my arms are a bit too short and my chest is a bit too big, but I'm trying. but my mum's a, you know, a singer as well and did a lot of stuff in choirs and all the rest of that. So nobody's...
It's in the family.
Yeah, totally in the family and goes back, we imagine. Nobody's, you know, cracked it professionally in any way, shape or form, but the idea that music was a thing that anybody could do and anybody should do and a place where I think anybody should feel welcome was really important. It was always a really welcoming space. And there was no, I mean, I kind of joke with my students that there are no bad music, just bad people. But I really do believe that, you know what I mean? I don't care what people listen to. If somebody's got something that turns them on, it's all I need to know. All I need to know about that music. And then, you know, I trust them and it's a really great gateway as well, which I think is how we used it as well. So, you know, I can remember things like, and I've written about this before, I can remember things like listening to records in the lounge room when we were little and, you know, the job was to see if you could dance hard enough so the record would jump, stuff like that.
What would be played on the record player?
Oh, lots of different stuff. So mum and dad would pick, and mum and dad have quite different tastes, but still would, you know, you'd get different versions of things. So Dad would pick things that I think he thought we'd like. So there would be sort of like poppy things, things like Purple People Eater and those types of, I remember when the Muppets turned up in the house.
Oh, wow. That's
cool. First, and, you know, Muppets really were my gateway to a lot of things, you know, but then we'd have stuff that they really liked as well. So Mum was more of a folky, you know, liked a lot of classical as well. So I can remember, you know, being up late and listening, 8 o'clock, listening to classical music with Mum. Mum really loves Mozart, and so doing all of that stuff. But then, you know, they would also be, they'd be what we call, it was pre-Wiggles, just, but we'd listen to Don Spencer and all that kind of kiddie stuff. Young Talentine would always be in there as well, you know, stuff like that.
That's really interesting that your parents were already thinking about age-appropriate music, because we're a similar age and it wasn't necessarily, it's very much a done thing now, but it wasn't always.
Well, it wasn't an industry.
No.
But even then, if you think about it, like I don't, they wouldn't, so for example, with the Muppets, right, because Muppets, a lot of Muppets was covers, we'd start with the Muppets version of something and then we'd hear the other version, you know, and so there was always a bit of that going around. And in terms of appropriateness, it's really funny because there was, like, we were quite restricted in other types of media we could engage with, but music was kind of always a bit of an open slather, you know. And I can remember getting my first radio that was just mine and my first Walkman that was just mine, and there was really no restriction on what we listened to. Volume was restricted because there was an awareness that the only way you can really be damaged by music is by volume, and you really, really can look after your ears. But in terms of content, there wasn't really restrictions in that way. I mean, we'd have conversations about things and we'd talk a lot about why things were a certain way. There was certainly a taste in the house, don't get me wrong. Like, there was stuff people liked and didn't like, and you'd have arguments over that. But yeah, there was not really restriction in that way. Like, music was, again, if it's something you liked and that was good. And, you know, I think I talked to you about this before, but one of the earliest memories I have, musical memories, and I've written about this for a 33 and a third book on Kylie Minogue's first album that came into our house when I was 8, and Dad bought it for me. It's what I wanted, but he catalogued it in the same way he catalogued all the rest of the records in the house. And that was really a way of saying, your music is as important as everybody else's music.
It belongs in the collection.
It belongs in the collection, but it also says, and so do you. You know, what you like also belongs. And I just sort of think about how important that is too. It becomes that way of saying, it's that little tool that you can use to say, I respect you because I respect what you want to tell me. You know, I respect this little offering you've got. And I try to do that with other people as much as I can. Everybody's doing it.
It's fitting to play Kylie Minogue on 2SER when your guest is the wonderful Liz Jaffray, who I've asked to share some of her early interests in music.
Yeah, Locomotion. I have really strong memories of that track because when it came out, I heard it, thought, what is this amazing thing that Kylie Minogue has written and has come from afar? And we could then go, well, actually, that was Carole King, and you know, she wrote it, but actually Little Eva recorded it.
Yeah.
And
so it's got that intergenerational thing as well.
Correct.
Your parents would have known the Little Eva version, and here's Kylie Minogue, such a big pop sensation generation.
Dad had a copy, it comes, and that would happen all the time.
Beautiful.
You know, when
with the Muppets doing covers and then with your pop idol doing a cover from your folks' generation.
Exactly, and it would happen again, you know, when Wayne's World came out a few years later, we went and got, because one thing we used to do a lot with Dad, we'd go, what would call, you know, crate digging now, but we'd just go secondhand record shopping down the bottom of Ashwoods and all that lot. I'm trying to think the name of the street, but people, if you know, you know. There was a whole bunch of them, Ashwoods and Lawson's and Red Eye were all down there. But that was not a cool thing to do. That was just a thing that we did because we couldn't afford to buy records full price.
Yeah.
But you could get a whole lot of musical history as well. So Dad would be looking at the bigger records and everything else, and I'd literally be on the bottom row looking at the 45s because they're always down the bottom, and the music magazines, what was left. So that's what we'd do. And he would just take me and my sisters on a Saturday afternoon while other kids were going to sport. We would go on record shopping.
Oh, it's so cool. Yeah, yeah. You mentioning the music magazines might be a good way to move into the next question, I think. You do ultimately go on to become a music journalist, and particularly with the street press. So when you mentioned the magazines, I'm seeing an early kind of influence there in knowing that the street, the magazines exist. And
Yeah.
I don't know that we can do the whole story of how you get into the music journalism. Is it too big a jump to go into your, maybe this will give us a way to understand it, but your first interview with an artist or a band or an early one that is memorable?
Yeah. There's an easy link to it.
Okay.
So the really easy link is I was a musician. I'm still a non-practicing musician, but I got terrible stage fright. So I knew pretty early on I wasn't going to be a performer, but I still wanted to be around music. I also didn't have a lot of money, so I wanted to be around music. Music journalism was an easy way. And street press is an easy way because I'm a writer. I can write. I know about music. How can I contribute without being on stage? And that was the next thing. And so the way to do that, street press I was in love with, again, because it was everywhere. It was free. Everybody from anybody who was playing the entertainment centre or the cricket ground was featured next to people at the Hopetoun or at the uni, you know. So it was, everybody was in there, which what I really loved about it. It wasn't genre specific. Looking back now, of course, I understand there were certain things they wouldn't touch. Kylie didn't get a lot of a go in the street press, but I know now that's because people sort of felt with limited space, she's got enough coverage. She'll be all right. Who can we cover who perhaps needs that?
Still the attitude in community radio music and other independent places as well.
We don't love Brian, but Chapel doesn't need her help.
That's right. She's okay.
Correct. Yeah, she'll be right. Yeah. So then from that, I was trying to get into drum for a long time, and it was back in the day. Sort of email was almost there, but not quite. Yeah. So I guess we're talking late, mid-90s, sort of emerging up. I'd send emails, went nowhere. You could literally call and try and speak to the editor.
On a landline.
Yeah. And so I would do that. I'd try. Oh, yeah, he'll get back to you. Never happened. So the first interviews I got to do were online. There was a thing called the Oz Music Project, which was run by some awesome people. And I just emailed them. They had nothing, but it didn't cost them to print. So they didn't have that restriction. And I started off by reviewing stuff I already owned. But that was fine, and they were happy, and they could sort of work that out.
I love this. So you carved a place for yourself.
Yeah.
You knocked on the doors. Yeah. You said, okay, look, this is what I can do. Here's how I can help.
And they were really great. Like Jasper Lee, who replied to me, you know, gave me a go because also they needed content the same way online always works. So, you know, worked through that and then eventually was able to get through student press when I was at uni. And so wrote for Thurunka for a while. And the first big kind of interview, I guess, there was Stephanie Ashworth from Something for Kate, who was so kind to me. And I've since been able to say to her, you were so kind to me. Thank you. You know,
Stephanie Ashworth.
Yeah. So she's bass player and writer. Her and Paul are still the powerhouse. We actually interviewed her and Paul together for Music Mothers. And it was great because I did get the opportunity. And Paul's very much, you know, I mean, Paul's stunning. Who's not going to put the headline on Paul? But Steph has also the one who's, they're together. They've got kids. And so where he's been able to, sometimes she stepped out of the spotlight to be keeping the home fires burning. So we were able actually to talk about that as well and how that negotiation works and all of that kind of stuff. So it was really great to get to talk to her. And
that's so cool.
Yeah, but them together, you know what I mean, to be able to get a sense of that dynamic. And that also speaks to their generosity. I've got no idea. She was very sweet. She said she sort of had a memory of it. I'm sure she didn't though, because there must be 1,000 in that year, let alone anything else. But to still have that commitment to community year, essentially, you know.
Tracing out lines in the air to make it perfectly clear. He was swimming with some beautiful sharks.
good. Something for Kate here on 2SER as we take a musical journey with Liz Giuffre, hearing about some of her early experiences as a music journalist.
I was really surprised by, you know, first of all, there were not a lot of female journalists. There still aren't. And often you'll get sent to do, to talk to the ladies about lady things, yeah. Which is hilarious because Stephanie's never been a man, to my knowledge. Like, what can you, what even is that? But there's still that feeling that that's kind of, ladies will cover ladies and then ladies will read it. And I guess that's how it works. Eh? Yeah. But it also makes you kind of realise too, once you're writing, who are you speaking to? Because it's not just men who read or heterosexual groups of people that read. It's still a very kind of straight white man dominated ideology. But that's not the reality at all in terms of the audience and participation and everything like that. So I kind of had to think about that when I was writing. And that point of difference that I had that often made me feel outside and would often have me be excluded, I tried to lean into. Yeah. So the first thing I had published that I was actually paid for was with the ABC, a thing that was called Fly that kind of went on to be Dig and other things. But I pitched them a story called The Short Person's Guide to Seeing a Rockstar, which was literally about being 5'1" standing in a crowd,
yeah,
saying, how do I do this? And I think it resonated because it's a thing that you tell anybody who'll ask, just you've got to lean into your what you have, your perspective. You don't want it to be totally autobiographical. And you don't want to make it about you, of course, but you can't pretend that you're something that you're not. And so that was the point of difference.
Find your point of view, what is unique to you.
Correct. Or distinct about you.
Distinct.
Because you're not unique.
Not unique. That's the wrong word.
As much as our mums love to tell us
that. No, because it's distinct.
Yeah.
Because, and it's also, it's distinct but relatable. Because if it was unique, then it would be
exactly
not something that people connect with.
Yeah, or a bit of a bit unattainable too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it is that it's finding that perspective and who are you representing, but also then hopefully building a bit of empathy too. Because the idea there was to say, well, while I'm people who are 6 foot, 6 foot five have no idea I'm even there. So it's a little reminder just to look down, you know?
Mentioning the gigs and being at the gigs can maybe move us into, I'm thinking about now music events.
Yeah,
an event doesn't have to be a gig because an event can be a big story in the news or you know, a story in the public consciousness or something. So answer this how you will. Was there a music event or another kind of music-related story that you covered? It could be as a music journalist. Or maybe it's as an academic, because I know as a scholar of popular music, you've also written and commented in public on the radio and in the press from that scholarly point of view.
Yeah.
And so I was curious about a standout music event or story or moment that you've covered in any of those ways. And that's a very big question.
Yeah, well, there's a couple. I mean, well, first of all, when I started out, the big thing was you'd get tickets to something like the Big Day Out, which I never could have afforded to go to at that time. And you'd get two. So for a while you found yourself being, you know, the most popular person in your network because all of a sudden people wanted to be the plus one. But the thing about that was weird was because I was so aware of what a privilege it was to get to go, because I literally wouldn't have been able to afford it any other way. And you'd go into the media, and when you go, there's a particular media section, which often has, you know,
like a VIP tent
thing. And we used to joke there was the V and the VVIP because, you know, we weren't actually that important. And then they would even do that according to what media you were at. So, you know, I'm at Street Press or online. I'm not in the proper. I'm not hanging there with you with Rolling Stone. And that's cool by me. But it was funny because you'd see those people, a lot of those people would be talking to each other and not out seeing the bands. And I remember being struck by, you know, my goodness, you've got this amazing ticket and you're not, why aren't you down the front? You know, and the other thing would be was because the expectation, as it should be, would be that you'd be there from the beginning to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I've been an old lady well before now.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it would be quite exhausting. I'd find that, you know, I'd be there from the first song for the first band and try and be there for the last song for the last band. And that's just, you know, you can't do that if you still got to go home and write it up and turn it around real quick.
Oh.
So that was kind of those types of things. But then I'd also notice, and I guess this is where the crossover started to happen. I'd go to things like the ARIAs. And again, if I'm reporting on it, it was literally, we'd be downstairs while all the beautiful people were upstairs. And I've got this really vivid memory of the mid-2000s when I was doing my master's, and I was doing my master's on cover versions. And at the same time,
you did like a research bit for you. You had a master's by research?
Yeah. So, and there was this big kind of, it was the first round of Australian Idol, but, you know, like a version had been going for a while and unearthed and everything. And I remember at that ARIAs, Missy Higgins won a lot of stuff, but also Guy Sebastian, like all of those, the two extremes were winning.
Right, like the singer-songwriter and the person who'd come through the television music.
Who'd apparently cheated by getting covers.
Yes, yes.
And so it was really funny to see how the media treated them really differently. And I asked Missy when she'd won, I'd said from the floor, but what's the difference between you guys? Because actually, and she was really stunned because I think I didn't know that at that point, your job as a journalist is to say, you've just won 7 ARIAs. How do you feel? And their job is to say, oh, I feel really good. Thank you very much. And that's meant to be the exchange there. I just didn't get it. So everybody went, oh, well, and I mean, it was fine, but I kind of hadn't picked that difference, you know, and you're,
which is great. We need more of that. Yeah. We need more people who aren't just falling in with the convention.
Yeah, but I hadn't meant to be a gotcha or a nasty thing. I'd actually meant to say, isn't this great? And it was the same one where the Wiggles had won, as they always win, but people were actively laughing at them in the media room.
Hot potato, hot potato. Hot potato, hot potato. Hot potato, hot potato. Potato.
And I remember just being so embarrassed for us as journalists. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this is somebody who's just been given awards. And so I asked them a couple of questions about whatever. At that point, I didn't know them. I didn't know they worked terribly well because I'd been too old to be. I was listening to Don Spencer. It was a pre-Wiggles world for me, but I was also just that bit too young to have kids in my orbit yet. So I'd kind of
had the children.
So I kind of didn't know their stuff, but I wanted to. I just a professional respect to say, you've just won these awards. Tell me about you as musicians, and you know, and that sort of set me on a path, an academic path, to start exploring them as musicians and artists and real innovators in the music industry. And after that, I went and gave a paper at a really big, so Popular Music has this big organisation called IASPM, and we had a big international conference in Liverpool, of all places, so the home of popular,
where the Beatles and music, Merseysound and all
Yeah. So I gave a presentation there, and I was lucky enough to be on, they just lucked out. It wasn't because I was good. It was literally because they needed something, but I was able to give the first of what would become a lot of the Music Mothers stuff and everything to say, look, why is there some popular music we don't consider, and why is that? Like, it's popular with the wrong people. You know what I mean? That's the thing. There's the idea that not all people are the same, or not all ages are the same. So it's kind of pulling at that thread. You know, and again, we were looking at covers and all that stuff. So
wow. So you took that firsthand experience of being in the industry sections, and seeing how the attitudes to popular, different kinds of streams of the popular music, and then able to take that and speak to the academy about it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I mean, I guess I'm lucky that I was already on the outer. So, because I was a postgrad at that point and not even a PhD, a master's person. So you're already kind of not important enough to be, when you're on the outer, you've actually got quite a lot of power, ironically.
Which can be critical.
Well, you can say
about worrying that you've got nothing to lose in a way, because you're not going to lose your position on the top of the throne or on the,
And I'm very lucky actually that in that room, there were people who are really high up and good high ups want to see what's happening at that level because they want to know what the future is. There's also a bit of them just, I'm sure, checking that you've cited them. That's fine too. But you'd know from conferences, right? You see those people you've read. And I had Simon Frith, who's like the godfather of our popular music studies, who was there and said, good job. And I went, what?
Oh.
So, you know, those types of things are great. But to answer your question around, you know, those memories, I guess what struck me was the difference between what a punter's experience and a journalist's experience. And I get also too why it has to happen, because the punter can get pissed, go home, sleep in, not have to worry about it. I'm at work. I could never do that. And I would see journalists, you know, who would literally be having to write while they were there and file a story over the phone so it'll be in the next day. And I remember doing that too, of having to write it up and get it up online, you know. So
yeah, which is very much why you still have that the practitioner, researcher, teacher intersection. Those things are inseparable, because you bring those experiences, views, perspectives into your teaching and your research.
I hope so.
I'm so happy to have Liz Giffray as my guest on the Wide Open Air Exchange on 2SER.
I'm going to bring us home now. I wonder if I can now bring you into you as a mum and you having children, and also Music Mothers and Others, which is your podcast and radio program, and it's described as an audio parents group about popular music, and a chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. And I love your program. I love hearing your children's voices throughout it, little snippets of their voices. And you know, you often ask your guests about their children and music. And I'm curious with you, you had that sort of intergenerational influence from your parents in your home. What's it like for you? Are you enjoying sharing music with your kids? Have you had like a proud moment of seeing them maybe discover something for themselves or something you've introduced them to? That's my big curiosity for this conversation.
I mean, there's all of that. And so, and it goes the other way too. So because they don't remember my dad, and they won't remember my dad, their grandpa, they know about him through the music that he liked. And we try and do that.
Beautiful.
And so that's a way, because it is a way of knowing people, I think. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I can remember too, when we were little, when my grandparents would come over, dad's parents, my nonna and pa, we'd ask my nonna what she wanted to listen to. Like, it was always a thing to get a way to get to know somebody, but also to give somebody center stage for a minute. So we try and do that, and we try and make that as vivid as possible in terms of what they like. And it's because I was studying it as well too, you know, there was a bit of going to Wiggles stuff. There was a lot of leaning into Wiggles. They've kind of grown out of it now, and that's fine. That's the job.
Have they brought any popular music into the home that's not in the children's music category?
Well, K-pop, Demon Hunters is the thing. But actually my son at the moment, he's 5, he's AC/DC obsessed. Because Angus wears a school uniform and plays guitar. So he sees him, and he's got a little A on his hat, and his name's Anthony. So he gets it. He's a little guy, you know. And through then, they're picking up other things. My daughter's starting, she's 7, she's starting to bring things. And, you know, we'll have questions around, do you like this? And I've got to be careful, but I try and say to them, if you like it, I like it. Nice. I like what it does for you, you know, because also too, I'll play music that they don't like, and you know, my husband will play music they don't like, or mum will play music or something. I'm like, yeah, but if it makes somebody, if it's special to the person that is special to us, then it's special. That's all we need to know.
Liz Giffray, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You're a legend. Love your work, and it's been great.
Thank you.
That's it for the Wide Open Air Exchange. I'm Christine Gallagher. Thank you, Liz Giffray. That was so fun. Really getting us in the vibe for Radiothon, 2SER's annual fundraiser, which is on this September from the 12th to the 26th. You can find all the details at 2SER.com.
Subscribe to 2SER as a passionate or super sub and choose your 2SER merch reward. As a 2025 Radiothon exclusive, the legendary Reg Mombasa has designed a t-shirt specifically for 2SER in his iconic style. Reg's music and art is part of the fabric of Sydney, just like 2SER. Check out the 2SER ear guitar t-shirt at 2SER.com. Feel the vibe. Subscribe.